Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talked to Jessica Gunson, the Acting Call Center and Intake Unit Manager of the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center, or the CAFC. If you didn't know, March is actually Fraud Prevention Month in Canada. It's not too late, and you haven't missed it, which is a good thing because this is a very popular time of year for scams. The CAFC actually wants us to talk more about fraud because, according to their data, fewer than 5% of victims file a fraud report with the CAFC, even as tens of millions of dollars are being lost. Honest talk about fraud is the topic of this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. There were literally thousands of incidents of fraud reported to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center last year. This fraud covers a myriad of angles, including extortion, phishing, counterfeit merchandise, identity theft, and even romance fraud, which alone cost Canadians the most last year to the tune of $22.5 million. In all, there were 59,009 fraud reports from Canadian consumers and businesses last year, costing them $97,654,160.35. And again, that represents only 5% of the total fraud committed. The Guelph Police website lists three major fraud types for people to be aware of: the aforementioned romance scams, employment scams where people offer you a job to get your personal information, and home improvement scams. Specifically, you may have heard about people posing as the Canadian Revenue Agency, telling you that you owe back taxes or that you're owed a refund. In-person scams are also a thing right now in Guelph. And if you've recently been offered a new water filter by someone selling them to you at your front door, then you already know about it. In other words, if you feel like you might be being scammed, you probably are. It seems like a good rule of thumb for a world seemingly full of scammers, but where do you begin with learning what you need to know about keeping your hard-earned money in your own pocket? You might have come to the right place. This week on the Guelph Politicast, we get some background and good advice from Jessica Gunson about combating fraud by phone, online, and in person. We'll talk about the ways people get your personal information, how you know you're talking to who you think you're talking to, and the various tells that will reveal if that email you got is from who they say it is. We also talk about how much fraud is going on right now, why you can just say no to anyone that's trying to sell you something, and what your best foot forward should be when dealing with people who want your money. So I caught up with Jessica Gunson last week by phone from her office in Ottawa.
Jessica Gunson, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
I want to start out with kind of just broadly the situation with, I was going to say the situation with fraud, but the amount of fraud that's going on right now and the caseload that you're dealing with in your office, is it, you know, about normal, if there is such a word for this, normal? Is it, you know, higher than usual? Is it lower than usual? Where are we on the fraud spectrum right now?
It's pretty on par with what we've seen in previous years. The volume of fraud reports that we receive is, I don't even have the right word. we're inundated. Mm. Our phone lines are open from 9 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. and they ring nonstop all day. So to kind of give an idea, if we look at last year in 2018, for just simply Canada, we received just over 59,000 fraud reports from Canadian consumers and businesses. And when we look at the total reported losses, it's just over $97 million.
Wow.
So we also estimate, if you take those numbers, we also estimate that less than 5% of consumers and businesses actually report to our center. So when we look at those types of numbers just for Canada, and we estimate that it's less than 5%, we know that mass marketing fraud is a real problem. Mm. It's something that prevention messaging and initiatives and doing a podcast like this is so good because it may save that one person that is going to be targeted tomorrow from losing potentially their life savings. So there's just some awareness that we need to take on. We need to be able to recognize these scams. And this kind of goes in part with our slogan, we need Canadians to recognize the scams, know to reject them, and then lastly, where to report them if they have given money or personal information. Mm-hmm. So it's really knowing what's out there because they're going to continue. These guys are making good money, yeah. And as long as people are going to fall for these scams, they're going to continue.
So that $97 million you mentioned, that's from the 5% that's mm-hmm. reported, or is that extrapolated, that if 5% are losing this much money, that...
So that would be, so yeah, so it, that those are definitive stats that we ran. So we, in 2018, so when we break it down, so for Canadians, those are the numbers, but we estimate that that's only about 5% of what's actually going on. And 5% is probably being generous. So we know that the numbers are much, much higher, but we go on based what's reported to us here at the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center.
So there could be billions of dollars a year in fraud in Canada alone.
Potentially, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder then, and I had this, I was going to ask this question about, we have Fraud Prevention Month, and the police have been doing a lot to promote this, you know, various police agencies. I've been getting all the press releases and everything. What role does embarrassment play in this in terms of, you know, people don't want to think that they've been scammed or they don't want to admit they've been scammed, and how does that exacerbate the problem?
I think that's probably the number one contributor as to why there's a number of reasons why consumer or businesses don't report, and I think probably because they're embarrassed, number one, that they fell for it, and they're ashamed. That's a big factor. They don't want anyone to know that, oh, geez, I fell for this after, you know, they may not have heard of a scam, they fall for it, then there's, you know, some prevention messaging out there or news releases on there, and they realize, oh my goodness, I was duped. So there's that fear that they're going to be judged, when in fact it's the exact opposite from our center here. We, you know, when someone calls to our center, what we let them know is that they're not alone, and that we commend them for coming forward to report it. We know that there's other factors there. We know that in some cases, especially when we look at the older population, they're afraid that if their family finds out that they're going to be judged, they may cut them off financially. They may think that they're no longer able to look after their finances, so they're afraid of losing their financial independence. There's some that believe that what's the point of reporting it? There's nothing that the police can do anyway, which is not the right mindset to have there, because this is why we're here, is so that investigators have a central point to come and look at these reports. And then sometimes we know we deal with victims that there's an cognitive impairment there, where they just actually don't realize that the person they're speaking to is not the love of their life, is not with the CRA, is not a Nigerian prince. And that happens. They believe it, and we sometimes have challenges there to convince someone that they actually are sending money to a scammer and facilitating other types of criminal activity.
Right, and I think there's an element of preventativeness too, that you may not get justice for yourself, but you may stop the next person from losing their money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's information that a victim, and they may not, you don't even necessarily need to be classified as a victim where there's money or personal information sent, but even if you've been the target, for example, I think of a romance scam victim or attempted victim, potential victim, that may actually have a lot of information on the person that claims to have fallen in love with them. For example, bank account information, phone numbers, you know, a lot of times it's fake information, but that information, when reported and is made available to law enforcement, may be that last piece of the puzzle that an investigation needs to, you know, then take it a step further. Now, we're not part of that process. We're not part of the investigative process or that first step, but that's why it's so important that even though you may not have lost money or personal information, the importance of reporting some of that detailed information is very, very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask about some of the specific scams that, I mean, that I know about, again, through just, you know, anecdotally or online or through police media releases. But the first one I want to ask about isn't unique to Guelph, and that is the CRA scam, that people get in touch with you mm-hmm. pretending to be with the Canadian Revenue Agency, and they are not. Why is the CRA, I mean, and particularly this time of year, obviously because of taxes, but why is the CRA such a popular beard for scammers?
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer, and it's not, you know, and the U.S. is having the same issue, except it's the IRS scam. So it's just the scammers have identified that they can use the name of a reputable government entity and exploit it. Mm-hmm. And they very quickly caught on to the fact that by using them and purporting to be the Canadian Revenue Agency, they could very easily convince consumers that they were going to be charged, arrested, sent to jail, in some cases deported if they were new to Canada, which is a very serious threat. That,
right.
You know, people were scared. They make the very threatening. When they realize that they can use this name, they use call spoofing to make it seem like it is the Canada Revenue Agency calling you. They are able to, quote-unquote, legitimize the call
mm-hmm.
to make it seem like they are with this government agency. When they can provide that layer, their payoff, I think, is much bigger when they use a recognizable name that every Canadian, we all pay taxes, you know, every year if someone's dealing with it. So, you know, for those that aren't aware of how it works, you know, where they call impersonating the CRA claiming a recent audit has identified discrepancies from past filed taxes and that repayment is required immediately. So there's a threatening undertone there always.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they fail to pay this, it's going to result in fees, jail time, and again, you know, possible deportation. So what they do is they'll request prepaid gift cards like iTunes, Google Play cards. We are seeing now that they're asking Bitcoin payments to be made. Makes it hard to follow the money when you're using prepaid gift cards and Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So our center, the CRA, we know other countries, you know, they're all being hit with this same type of scam. And so that's why this messaging that the CRA, while they do call-outs for certain campaigns,
right.
they're never going to call you to tell you that you need to pay money right away. They're never going to ask for a prepaid gift card.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to ask you to send a Bitcoin payment. And what we need Canadians to do is that if you are aware of how this scam works, is to be very vocal about it. Tell family, friends, neighbors, if you belong to a group or club, have that conversation. That's where it starts, because the more people that are aware that the scam is out there, the better prevention measures we can take against them.
Yeah, the one hand, though, I think people are a bit thrown off, because I've read the material, and it says, you know, CRA will only get in touch with you by registered mail, which makes sense because, you know, that's, you know, more secure, it's direct. But I think people are used to the conveniences of modern life, which is, you know, how do you get in touch with people? Well, you text, phone, email. Nobody really thinks about mail for getting, you know, important information from the CRA. And I think that's part of the lure, right?
Absolutely. It's that convenience. I know for myself, I actually, you know, I do get an email and a notification from the CRA, but I have to go and physically log into my account, and it's a Government of Canada website, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the messaging there is that they're not going to, send you an email with a link asking you to confirm all of your information. So it's knowing what the parameters are, and there is this digital world and online presence that, you know, that shift is happening. But I think what we need Canadians to know about is the fact that if in terms of a refund or an issue with your taxes, it's not going to be a phone call that's made like that. There is still going to be that registered letter. You're not going to have somebody just calling you, claiming to be the CRA, asking for information and claiming that you need to send money immediately. It's just not the way their processes work.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that and being able to arm yourselves with that, I always think of the younger generations now where, we walk around with our lives on our phones. Mm-hmm. Everything is done with text. You know, we bank online. We communicate, you know, through our phones. That mind shift, I completely agree with you. It's there. But what we need to remember is that when it comes down to certain organizations and how they conduct themselves, they would never use that type of communication to get in touch with you. And it's to recognize that.
Not about the, you know, if you owe them money, but if, you know, if there are circumstances where I think you're getting at where CRA might phone you.
Yeah, we've had some dialogue with the CRA, and to say that they would never call you, that's just simply not true.
Right.
We know that there are certain campaigns. The key there is that they're never going to call you to confirm that you owe back taxes,
right,
or that you're entitled to a refund. That's just not the purpose. So while they may do call outs for certain campaigns,
mm-hmm,
when it specifically comes to your tax refund or back taxes that need to be paid,
right,
there was never going to be that phone call.
Okay. So first good tip there is only trust the mail.
Especially if it's coming registered, yes.
Okay. And then if people are, you know, they get the call or they get the email and worry, you know, I guess the safe bet is to just contact CRA directly. Don't respond to the call or the email.
Yes.
But take it upon yourself to check in with CRA directly and just make sure.
Yes. Absolutely. And phishing, so, you know, phishing emails and text messages, you know, when we look at the number of reports we received in 2018,
mm-hmm,
while extortion type complaints, which the CRA falls under, is number one, phishing is number two.
Mm.
So there's a very, it's widespread. So if you're receiving an email or text message that claims to be the CRA and you have to click on something to verify, that's your 100% proof that it's not the CRA. And we know that they, phishing emails come in all shapes and sizes. They look like they're coming from your financial institution or credit union.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the current circulation contains one that looks like they're coming from Amazon, Netflix, uh-huh, Apple. So it's to be aware that if you're getting an email and there's an issue with your account and they make it look very good.
Right.
They use the logos. They this is what it is. It's phishing. These are sent out en masse. They cast that net, and they're going to see who's going to fall for it. And what's funny is that, true story, mm-hmm, I was getting ready to, so at the end of February, I was getting ready to travel to BC to give a presentation. My husband was starting to work on our taxes. I get an email. Actually, I believe it was a text message saying that our refund was ready to go. And it you know, I recognized it for what it was, but I actually screenshotted it and I included it in my presentation because I kind of blew it up and showed where the email address is. It was coming, it had a UK domain.
Right.
There was a spelling mistake in it.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that they were using it, at first glance, someone would assume. And what was funny is that my husband actually was at home working on the taxes. And so I just put up a slide saying no one is immune. Everybody is potentially a target for these types of solicitations. But that, again, I go back to that key of recognizing it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, how do you tell the difference between, because this is a bit sketchier because we tend to communicate through Amazon, Apple, Netflix, all those things. Those are all internet based where we kind of deal with them exclusively on the internet. So if you get an email like that, those are some of the tip-offs, is to check the domain, check for, yeah.
So the key is if you're getting an email, it could be, for example, if I've purchased something off Amazon, I do get that automatic email. And all it says is that here's your order, here's the status, or maybe if it's been shipped, I get that. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to click on a link.
Mm.
Now, if I get an email saying, thank you for your purchase of baby doll clothes that I have not purchased.
Right.
And I get that email, kind of the first instinct I think someone would do is that they're going to read that email and go, I didn't order that. And what the scammers will do is put a link in there saying, if you did not order this, please click on this link.
Right.
So you click on the link, it may ask you to verify your information. That too, like that's the tricky part of this, is that it is to recognize that not to click on any links contained within the email. Mm. What you're better off to do is delete the email, go on separately to log into your account. There you will see that probably no purchase of any baby doll clothes was made.
Right.
If you need to send a question, you can send a question to Amazon, or if you want to send them a copy of that, say, hey, I received this. The key is to not respond through that vehicle that is telling you
right.
that this purchase has been made. It's the link. There's always going to be a link.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what consumers need to avoid. That link, you don't even want to click on it. Even though you may not provide personal information, there's always the potential that it could contain malware, malicious software, keylogger.
Mm, right.
I'm not a techie, but these are the words that they use that could potentially harm your system.
Right.
And like these emails, I can't stress how good they look. You know, I've put them up side by side, the real and the fake, and I can't tell them apart. It's not until you go through and you realize that, oh, this page is asking me now for my mother's maiden name, my date of birth, and my SIN.
Right. Mm,
my bank already has all that information. I don't need to verify anything.
Right.
Do not click on it. Do not put your information in those fields.
And at the very least, it might tell someone that you are someone who will click on a link, even if you don't fill out that information, that they might get you eventually with something.
Absolutely. There's always that potential, for sure.
Okay. I want to talk about something a bit different that's been happening here in Guelph, and I'm sure it's been happening in other places too, which is door-to-door sales. And this in this particular instance, I believe it's water filters or something to do with water. And I think this is sort of another popular disguise for these scammers is water, water sales, water filters, water tanks, what have you. This has been going, these have been going for a while, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. We continue to receive reports on door-to-door sales, quote unquote schemes. Mm. So they continue to pose a threat to Canadians for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, what I know is that Ontario, a couple of years ago, banned door-to-door sales. So, I mean, right away, that's a red flag. But, how well does the law work in terms of getting these scammers? Tough question.
Well, as we know, there's lots of laws that get broken, right?
Right.
Just because there's a law in place doesn't mean that you're still not going to have those scammers try to bend the rules.
Mm.
It's a little bit harder with door-to-doors because you're dealing with someone face-to-face. Here at our center, we've received reports that include charitable donations, investment opportunities, and then exactly what you're talking about, like a service involving maintenance or sale of an appliance or device, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that March 1st, 2008, Ontario banned unsolicited door-to-door sales of certain household appliances to better protect consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So the new rules, they apply to air cleaners, air conditioners, air purifiers, duct cleaning, furnaces, water filters, water heaters, water purifiers, softeners, and treatment devices, as well as, you know, bundles of these goods and services. So while they've banned it, if it happens, it's to know where to, it's to know your rights.
Right.
So that's where, and we know that it differs from province and territory there. So it's always good to familiarize yourselves with the guidelines mm-hmm. under the Consumer Protection Act. There is a handy link. I think, I'm not sure if the links are, I know you may have to do some digging, but we often will refer consumers to the consumerhandbook.ca.
Mm-hmm.
And there it contains, so no matter what province or territory you're in, it will provide the guidelines. So if you're a consumer and you've been solicited, door-to-door with a sale of something. Maybe you've signed something. Maybe you've, it depends on the situation. Maybe you've agreed to schedule a follow-up appointment. It's really to contact your provincial ministry, your territorial ministry, your consumer affairs office, and ask what are the next steps.
Okay.
It's a little bit different than mass marketing fraud, which is solely or it's more specific to what we do here.
Right.
But there are some good tips in that consumers can do, you know, to keep in mind if they are solicited door-to-door. So, you know, feel free to ask for a photo ID. So get the name of the person, the name of the company, or if it's a charity, feel free to ask that. We're very polite. We're very polite people. We don't want to be rude.
Right.
But you don't need to be rude. But you know, you're coming door-to-door. I don't know who you are. You're claiming to be this. Can I see some photo ID? Can I see the name of your company? Feel free to make a note. If it's someone that's soliciting on behalf of a charity, ask where the breakdown is. Where's the money going to be allocated? And ask for it in writing. So a charity, for example, can be registered. But if you're giving $100 and only 10% is going to the actual cause, you may wish to donate, but you may wish to donate your $100 elsewhere.
Right.
We say never to share any personal information or provide copies of any bills or financial statements. So that's a common one that we've had reported here, is that they want a copy of the water bill, they want a copy of your gas bill, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's your personal information. Keep it safe. If it's an investment, we always recommend you research before you invest. Don't sign anything. Always read the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about that cooling off period. Mm-hmm. When you're faced door to door, a lot of times it can be high pressure sales. There can be some aggressive tactics that could be there.
Right.
And there's like an urgency to sign something, or they don't, you know, like most, you know, reports that we receive, they don't want to give them time to really think.
Right.
There are some cooling off periods. So if a contract is signed within your home, you have a cooling off period. So, for example, in Ontario, you have the right to cancel a contract for any reason within a 10-day cooling off period. Now, for water heater contracts, there is a 20-day cooling off period. And again, so knowing your rights in that provincial and territorial consumer affairs link, it's knowing what recourse you have, and that's where you're going to find your information on how to deal with something if you have signed it. I'm not sure what the procedure would be if the cooling period has ended, but that's where those provincial offices could probably provide additional assistance.
And I just wanted to note, too, that these people can be aggressive. Like, they'll try to get in your house, and that's where they will try and stay until you sign the deal. Then, you know, that's what we mean by aggressive. Not just they're just pushy like any normal salesman is, but that you know, they're aggressive.
Absolutely. So, and it's, again, you know, it's okay to say, you know, I'm not comfortable with you, you know, coming into my home.
Right.
And it's amazing because we know consumers will say to us, well, I didn't want to be rude, or, you know, I didn't know what to do. And we understand that. I'm completely guilty of that. You know, so it's easy to sit here and say, well, just tell them to get lost. But when you're facing that situation, by nature, we're the polite Canadians, and we don't want to be rude. But I think it's a matter of just saying, you know, I'm not comfortable with this. I'm not interested. Have a good day and just close the door. And leave it at that.
Good enough. Before we wrap up, I think it behooves us to talk a little about just how much you have to sort of guard your information, because when I was getting ready to talk to you, I was reading about how people are able to get your information through something simple like a job posting site where your resume is there, and if you post your resume on a job site, you're hoping to get a job, but scammers are also looking for information on job posting sites.
Exactly. We need to be conscious that any time we have or we post our information on any sort of online form, you're kind of leaving, not that there's a vulnerability, but that you're opening the door.
Mm.
So just to be aware, be careful of what information you're posting, especially if it's on an open forum.
Mm.
So where we do know that these job websites exist, maybe don't include your date of birth. Only provide maybe a phone number as a contact. Put a notation on the resume that, you know, for more information. But again, you have to be careful. Scammers go through these sites, so they they may solicit you to, you know, become an accounts payable person where you're receiving and sending money. Well, now you're money laundering, or you're now a money mule, and so you need to. You really need to know who you're dealing with.
Right.
And I think it all comes down to is treating your personal information like cash. So if we think of the whole identity fraud, which we receive lots of reports on that every single day, treat your personal information as you would cash. So it's valuable.
Right.
It's worth something to somebody else. So when you are posting, you know, and if you're on social media, have a look, you know, make sure that, I very much stress this to my nieces and nephews. My son's only 4. He doesn't have anything online yet. But I really stress to them, you know, do you know who you're talking to? Is your profile, private?
Right.
It should be. I kind of keep on them, and we have these quote-unquote, they call them Auntie Jessica's life lessons, where I said, do we need a life lesson today? It's having those conversations, especially when there's so many platforms that we have our information and what we put out there, you can't take back.
Right.
So, you know, make sure your date of birth isn't showing up. Be conscious of what you post. And especially, I don't even want to get into, you know, most recruiters, they're going to look you up on the social media platforms. So be conscious of what you're posting. And if you have an email address that's, you know, partyjess247 @hotmail.com, and you're putting that on your resume, you're probably not going to get a lot of callbacks. But that's a whole different animal. I'm getting off topic, but it's really, what are we putting out there? Protect it. It's valuable. And you don't need everybody knowing your business. And there's also that threat that someone may open up a credit card. We know people that have found out they have lines of credit. They have loans and, you know, for tens of thousands of dollars in their name, and they don't know how that happened. And it's, the scammers are good, so they're going to get that information. So we need to be aware, and again, recognize where we're putting that information and that it could leave, you know, a vulnerability there.
I guess what they said on the X-Files was right all those years ago. Trust no one. That's the best policy.
But trust no one, but trust your gut. Mm. And that's something that we can't stress enough. Scammers want that, and this is my tagline, they want the knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
So whether it's a phone call, an email, a text message, what they want is for you to react. They don't want you to stop and think that this may not be real. Because if you stop and think, if you stop and ask somebody about it, they're going to tell you, hey, that sounds like a scam. People, every single day, distrust their gut feeling. And they will often report to us that, you know, it didn't sound right, but I went ahead and sent the money.
Right.
What we want people to do is to stop. Sometimes a simple online search, just on an open forum, will give you the information and some key points to say, hey, I need to look into this further. Taking a second to research something. Be aware that scammers will post links on, you know, your browsers. So if you're wanting to contact Apple or Google, don't click on the ads, but go to the actual website that you may have used before. If you've used Apple support, log into, like, you know, don't just click on a link. These guys are good. We need to be aware. We need to be able to recognize that this stuff is out there.
Okay. That's heavy, but it's what you got to do, I guess. And so, Jessica Gunson, thank you so much for your time and your expertise today.
My pleasure.
And once again, that was Jessica Gunson with the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. Here's the public service announcement portion for this week's podcast. According to the CAFC, 6 reports for reporting mass marketing fraud if you happen to be a victim. It's important because, as you heard Gunson say, only 5% of mass marketing fraud is reported. So if you feel like you might be too embarrassed to report that you've been defrauded, it's important to know that you are not alone. So from the CAFC, your first step is to gather all information pertaining to the fraud and then report the incident to your local law enforcement. Step 3 is to contact the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center toll-free at 1-888-495-8255. 8501 or through the fraud reporting system on the CAFC website at antifraudcenter-centraldefraud.ca and then report the incident to the financial institution where the money was sent. Step 5 is to alert the website that the fraud took place on if the contact was made online, and then the final step is to place flags on all your accounts and report to both credit bureaus, which are Equifax and the TransUnion. You can find more links to anti-fraud resources on the show notes page for this episode of the podcast on Guelph Politico. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph by offering a donation to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.